You are listening to the Colorado Bowhunters Association podcast. I am your host, Jake Kunkin.
Welcome back to another episode of the CBA's ABCs of Bowhunting. I am here with our wonderful chairman, Henry Ferguson. Henry, you've been busy. You missed our banquet, but you're back, our fearless leader, and ready to take action in between international and national trips.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple months for me, Jake. But, you know, the beauty of being in a volunteer organization is we're all replaceable. And that's, I mean, hey, we had a wonderful banquet from what I hear.
It was great.
Like you said, I wasn't there. But yeah, we had a great banquet. And that's because we've got a lot of great people on the board and people who are invested in this and are more than capable of filling in where needed. So
yeah, and the event went well, and it's nice that, like, to feel like people care enough to step up to the plate, right? Because yeah. I've been in organizations where people don't care enough to step up to the plate, and the meeting gets canceled or the thing doesn't go as well. And so
yeah, we all have.
It's interesting to think about the CBA because, you know, I've only been a member for like 4 years now, but it's an organization that I'm proud of, and it's an organization that I want to make proud, meaning yeah. how I participate in the ecosystem at large in terms of sure. state and national kind of hunting issues and things like that. I moved out here in 2019 when they solidified the current big game season structure.
Yeah.
And I've hunted every year, and this will be the fifth year of this big game season structure. I didn't have any say in its last evolution or iteration. I wasn't as much of a participant back then, but I've been heavily participating now. And they're kind of in the throes of evaluating CPW staff recommendations and allegedly, I'll say that with air quotes, going around the state and gathering information from citizens like you and me so the commission can make their decision. I think you rewatched that original commission meeting that we had, right?
I sure did. Yeah. So I was actually on a plane, literally flying over the Pacific, coming home during that meeting. I landed that evening in San Francisco and started watching it immediately.
Yeah.
Cause you know, they are all on YouTube. So if anybody hasn't seen it, go to the CPW's YouTube page and look at day two of the commissioner's meeting. And yeah. they're all on there. It's all public information. Yeah. And I did get to watch it. Unfortunately, you know, there's some pros and there's some cons to it as there always are.
Absolutely.
The pros were, man, the bow hunters showed up.
And in force, man.
I mean, that makes me insanely proud.
Same.
The fact is, yeah, we were backed into a corner where, you know, when you put your backs up against the wall, hey, there's going to be some fight coming out of there. And I mean, for anybody to expect anything less is kind of foolish, you know, because hey, this means a lot to all of us. We are all heavily invested in this, whether you're a member of the CBA board or whether you're just any bow hunter in the state. We're all on the CBA board because we are passionate bow hunters. So exactly. I mean, we all have that same core thing that's very important to us. And you know, bow hunters showed up, and man, I can't think of a single bow hunter who did not represent themselves in a professional and very, very respectful manner. And that's what I think that's what is most effective for, mm-hmm. for changing people's minds. Because, you know, when you did listen to that meeting, boy, there, you know, one thing I didn't love, and I'll just say if I'm king for a day, you know, and I had a change to make, I would hold commission opinions until after the public comments.
Yeah.
That was a little disingenuous, but you know, but after, I'll tell you, there were a lot of those opinions that bow hunters shared that really did resonate with the commission. And I do feel that providing overwhelming evidence to the contrary of their opinions can have a profound effect.
I completely agree with you. Let's take a half step back to kind of set a foundation for folks who might sure. not know what's going on. So every 5 years, Colorado Parks and Wildlife evaluates a big game season structure, and that is methods of take, season dates, lengths of seasons, and then
timing of season,
timing of seasons, and then kind of a tag allocation, but that can somewhat be adjusted on an annual basis. We are at the end of a big game season structure. This will be year five of a five-year structure. And last summer, fall, winter, CPW started to put out surveys that people could participate in to gauge their interest in potential topics so that they could kind of compile their thoughts, CPW's recommendation. Now, you and I have had offline conversations about how we feel like sometimes those questions are skewed to create the recommendations that they want because the language is a little weird or a little confusing. And in this commission meeting, there were several proposals. One thing that you and I will talk about, because I know it's something that you're looking forward to, early archery mule deer. That we'll save that as a positive thing to talk about at the end here.
Well, and even that has a caveat, because that's, you know, that came as a proposal from us.
Uh-huh.
However, what ended up coming out in their proposal was quite different.
Yeah.
So I'll be more than happy when we get to that to explain what we proposed and then ultimately how, you know, what they proposed in return. But
yeah, let's do that. And what we'll do is we'll talk about kind of what happened during this first meeting, and like they're long freaking meetings. So
can I take you back a little bit farther?
Oh yeah. So, let's do that.
So last August, early last August, let's see, Lane Walter, our CPW liaison. I was just talking to Danny Ferris last night. So I had that on the mind, but so Lane Walter, our CPW liaison, Conrad Dreyer, Paul Navarre and myself met with a bunch of the, basically most of the high ranking CPW officials at their headquarters. And we discussed a number of things. Number one being, you know, the concerns about the removal of OTC archery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been a lot of changes over the last few years that have led us to this point. And, you know, as they've taken more and more of these DAUs to a draw system, essentially they've left us with a much smaller footprint in which to bow hunt as compared to those seasons that are open for second and third rifle.
Sure.
Now, there's been a couple of different reasons for those different DAUs going to a draw, but it's all kind of ended up looking like there was a big master plan to force this issue,
which is the elimination of OTC archery elk hunting.
That is exactly it. So I'll go through these real quickly here. So there were a couple of them that had massive fawn or calf recruitment issues.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the 16, which is that area kind of around Vail, mm-hmm. a lot of those went to a draw in, I think, 2016, 2017, somewhere in there. Actually, might have been later than that. But those units, again, had some calf recruitment issues, and they were, you know, the wintering grounds had been highly developed and stuff. So they've had some big issues there. So that one they took, and okay, that's, you know, as much as we didn't want to see that happen, hey, it happened, and we understand that. Then they really doubled down on the calf recruitment issue in the Southwest, down around Durango, those 70s units. And okay, well, that's, if it's a significant, genuine calf recruitment issue, again, we argued against it, but that did go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Now the unfortunate thing is they only did that to archery. They did not change those for rifle.
Right.
And that I'll be honest, that bothers me significantly. Number one, bow hunters have a far less impact, you know, a far lesser impact on animal herds than rifle hunters do. I mean, the success numbers don't leave any ambiguity there.
Well, the overall hunting numbers too are just significantly less too.
They are. But you know, I'll get to that one here in a second as well. And then the next one was the DAU kind of southwest of Pueblo, the Sangres there. And that one, I mean, it was a that one just kind of got sprung on us, to be honest. And that one was a crowding issue, and boom, that one was gone. And then the last one was a crowding issue, and that was the Grand Mesa area. So again, we lost four big DAUs in the last five years. And unfortunately, what that's done is that has consolidated the 50 some thousand bow hunters that are out there into an ever shrinking piece of pie.
Yep.
So as a result, we now have crowding issues. It's an issue. You and I have talked about your OTC hunts in the past. Sorry, trying to get over a cold here.
All good.
You know, there are people out there on the landscape for sure. So it became very, very clear early on in this discussion that there was going to be a change. Now, that change could come in a number of different formats and a couple of different options. First option being limit all archery hunts, all archery tags, all OTC tags. Okay, not ideal and not something that we are in any way in favor of. The second was to keep OTC for residents and then come up with a cap for non-residents. So that was something that we said, okay, yeah, that's a lot more palatable for us. You know, residents, hey, we're here all year. We pay taxes all year in our state and we should get some benefits from that. I mean, it seems only fair, right?
Absolutely.
Just as residents of the states that are coming, you know, non-residents who are coming out here to hunt in our state would expect to have those same rights in their own home state. So that's kind of where, we pushed that discussion and thought that that's where this was headed. So there's a couple of different ways they could do that. They could either do OTC with caps for non-residents and say, okay, we're going to have, if there were last year and I'm going off of memory here. I think there were 26,000 non-resident OTC archery hunters last year.
I think it was a little lower, but right in there, 20 to 24.
Right in that neighborhood. Yeah. It's kind of ebbed and flowed over the last few years, right around there though. So what we asked was, hey, this is, what if we just capped that at a lower number? And once those tags are sold, they're sold. You know, it still wouldn't force people into a draw system. They could just get online and purchase those tags. Idaho has a similar system. Utah has a few hunts that are distributed like that. So, I mean, it's not something that's not out there and already happening in the world. And we felt that that was a pretty good option because there's a lot of people who are intimidated by a draw process.
Sure.
Having to go through that. And I get it. I get it completely. I mean, this weekend I'll apply for Colorado for myself, my wife, my son, and hunts in Utah as well, and maybe even another state or two. But it's difficult to manage all that, but it's not impossible. So that's kind of where we started. And again, you know, when we realized that changes were going to have to be made, you know, our priority there was to protect at least some of that privilege. And that mm-hmm. was the only path forward on that was to try to protect the resident bow hunters, which is what we've been trying to do.
And so what came from that meeting, or was it just them listening?
Okay, that meeting, we discussed the elk stuff. And then we also discussed an option for archery deer. Because archery deer, you know, this last 5-year season structure, in fact, you moved here the first year of that. So you didn't hunt under the previous,
right,
under the previous dates, which basically started the last Saturday of August and went through the last Sunday in September.
Mm-hmm.
So what that meant is we could have hunts starting as early as like August 20th, 20, you know, 25th in that neighborhood there. And mule deer for archery hunters, they're a lot more predictable. They're a lot more patternable early on when they're in velvet. So mm-hmm. once that velvet sheds, man, they become a very different creature. And so that gave us what that gave us those first few days before, you know, leading up to the second, which is what we have now, was a few more days of hunting them. You know, if you're hunting in the high country units, you could have high country rifle hunters coming in as early as like September 5th on some years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not ideal, obviously. And then you can, then you're running into muzzleloader hunters, you know, shortly after that for 9 days. And so it really gave us, it took out a lot of our time that we had exclusively in the woods. In fact, it took out all of it.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. And I mean, you know, when we did this last time, because CBA is the ones who lobbied for that September 1st to 30th season date. And we did that because our membership was very, very strongly in favor of it when we did surveys. And hey, even though, you know, it's not something I wanted, you know, we're a membership driven organization and we're a volunteer board who represents our members. And when they tell us a direction that we have to go, unless there's a very significant biological reason not to do it, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. And so that's what we did. And so our proposal was to disconnect archery deer from archery elk, mm-hmm. and instead connect those dates to archery antelope. So what that would do is essentially that'd give us season dates of August 15th through September 20th. Yeah, it would have actually added a few days to the hunt, which I don't think you would have heard any bow hunters complain about.
Sure.
But there's a secondary reason that we wanted this. It wasn't just to give us a higher quality mule deer hunt, but there was a secondary reason we wanted to do this. And that was to take some of those archery deer hunters out of the woods during the month of September, because many of them would be done before archery elk even open. So what that could do is decrease the amount of pressure that's put on the animals and put on other hunters too during that same period of time, that September period. What ended up happening is CPW instead went with their proposal is to go August 15th through September 1st in a select few units. And how they actually determine which units they want to do that in is it kind of remains to be seen, but mm-hmm. it's going to be pretty much according to management objectives. So
that's the current proposal for deer.
That's the proposal for deer.
Gotcha.
So sorry for the long-winded answer.
No, it's useful. I just want to make sure people are tracking.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the meeting, kind of a synopsis of the meeting that we had back in August. And honestly, it went fantastic. We felt we came out of there with some real hope, you know, and we shared our data with them. They shared some data with us. And that's how these things should work. I mean, we're the largest voice of bow hunters in the state of Colorado. And so, you know, we should be kind of the expert voice in the room when it comes to, you know, not just what bow hunters want, but what bow hunters need.
I agree with that. The thing that got me a little frustrated was that what ended up happening in this council was that when CPW staff presented the recommendations specifically around archery elk, their recommendation was to go completely limited for residents yeah. and non-residents, and admittedly saying this is not what our survey respondents wanted. And so
I think they even went so far as to say it was overwhelmingly unpopular with survey respondents.
What should be obvious when you have 50 to 100 people volunteering to speak in the middle of a day, right? The middle
on
of a work
Thursday.
Day. Yeah.
Not like it's on a Friday or something. So they just took an afternoon off. This required a real commitment. That's why I think it's so commendable that Bowhunter showed up in the numbers that they did. And there's going to be a couple more opportunities coming real soon to do that. And we will need to continue to keep this pressure on if we want this to
100%. I think it's the same thing you have to think about with like an advertisement, right? You might not buy that like new gadget or doodad until you see it three or four times advertised to you. So it's that same thing as you need to hear the same message, or these folks need to hear the same message. So I'm going to do a quick recap of where we're at to today and then how we can get to how we could participate in the future.
Yeah, that's great.
Those CPW meetings were 2 days long, lots of issues discussed, some relevant to us, some kind of just stuff that process and procedure that they needed to get through.
It's parks and wildlife.
So day two, starting about 4 hours in, is where it really gets like juicy in terms of bow hunters and what you care about. What happened is, I suggest you guys watch, I think his name is Matt Eckert, make CPW's recommendations to the commission. And like, I want to tell everybody that you got to stay peaceful during these things and you got to not let that anger boil up. But boy, was my blood boiling when he was talking and presenting, because it just felt like he was throwing the entire bow hunting community under the bus unnecessarily. Like one comment.
I got a lot of messages. Now, so keep in mind, again, I'm on a plane when this is happening.
So when you go off airplane mode.
I landed in San Francisco, my phone went berserk.
Steaming.
Oh, man. Seriously. The guy sitting next to me on the plane goes, "Oh, you're so popular." I said, "Yeah, I have a feeling something was said that wasn't very popular today." And I was absolutely right. When I started, by the time I got out of the airport and I'm going through messages, walking through the airport, got to the taxi, got to the hotel that night. I mean, man, it was, it took me a good 45 minutes to go through just through the messages.
It's nuts.
Where in the heck is this coming from? Why are they doing this?
And it's so interesting
because I just read something, and just to kind of put this in context, I just read something on a coos deer hunting page in Arizona, where their Game and Fish is recommending some pretty significant tag cuts in a one particular area.
Uh-huh.
And they're recommending the majority of the tags are cut out of the archery season. I'm like, oh, we're not alone.
Yeah, at least we're being attacked across the board.
Yeah.
So what happened is Matt spends about 15, 20 minutes going over his proposals and the survey and presenting the information to the very impressionable commission in the way that he knows they need to hear this information. He's laying it out in a way that there's currently 10 people on the commission with one vacant seat. I think
I almost corrected you and said 11, but you are absolutely correct.
And I'm glad we got that one vacant seat, but there's really only two people on the commission that I'm not worried about: Duke Phillip and Marie Haskett. And even Marie Haskett's, I don't fully agree with her.
Marie is very much in favor of everything going
fully limited. Yeah. So with that,
in fact, I do believe she initiated that conversation.
And so what happened is that CPW prints their staff recommendations. Commissioner May weirdly goes, "We're ahead of schedule. Why don't we hear from the commission?" Which is just like out of context, out of order, and kind of inappropriate because this is supposed to be a discovery period. And immediately one commissioner announces that they are in favor of CPW staff recommendations, specifically with elimination of over-the-counter archery elk. And every single commissioner on that call just fell in line and said the same thing. I will mention that Commissioner Bailey, who probably will fall in line, did not state her opinion, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's for sure that she'll fall in line. And honestly, I think a lot of those opinions, which were stated, in view of the overwhelming opinions to the contrary from the end users,
us. And so there was 50, 60 people signed up to speak for 2 to 3 minutes. I watched about 20 of them, and then I went. Paul Navarre went after me, and I was pretty hopeless at the end of the commission's opinions. And then at the end of the people's statements, I was like, oh, wait, we're showing up. We can maybe change the tide.
Yeah.
I called Paul Navarre afterwards, and he was like kind of depressed. And I was like, oh, no, you've seen this before. Maybe my hope is false. But where I'm at is that we have another meeting April 5th for Denver in person as well as hybrid, followed by a meeting on May 1st and 2nd. It's a Montrose / hybrid meeting. And then they're going to make their decisions, I think, either during or announce their decisions during the June 12th and 13th meeting or right
that's
after that.
The timeline, as I understand it.
So really, we have two opportunities as individuals to go speak at these things, April 5th and May probably 2nd. It's probably going to be the second day that you can comment on.
Yeah, it's usually
on
day
it.
Two. Yeah.
I made a comment on day one. I'll kind of post it or maybe tag it to the end of this video. I'll grab the audio from it or something. And what I did is I prepared to make that statement. I wrote a draft. I rewrote a draft. I slept on it. I looked at it and said, remove the vitriol, remove the anger, remove the hate, come with persuasion, come with solutions, be a passionate storyteller. And this might be a little advanced for some of our audience. I also use ChatGPT. And there's a free version. There's also the paid version. But you could take a typed essay and say, improve this or make this less controversial or make this a little bit more convincing. And it will change the language and still make your points and help you kind of come up with those drafts. And so I was able to do that and then kind of speak for a full 3 minutes. And I felt like I was able to articulate what I wanted to say. And now I'm crafting a new message for this second one.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to do is use, they have the 25 to 29 big game season structure recommendations on the CPW website. I'll link to it in our show notes. It's 27 pages, but the last page, table 1 and 2, show the financial impacts of tag reduction based on reducing across the board versus status quo for residents and reducing for non-residents. They do it with the archery breakdown and they do it with the rifle breakdown. And they're talking about a 10% reduction, a 25% reduction, and then a 50% reduction.
Yeah.
And they're using numbers from 2021, 2022. So our hunter numbers have increased a little bit from them. But what they're saying is in 21, 22, total archery licenses was about 34,000. It's like about 40,000 now.
I know at one point we were looking at closer to 52,000.
This might just be OTC elk.
That's probably what it is. I'll bet that's what it is because total archery licenses were like 52. So that it takes into all the draw. You know?
So just keeping only OTC elk in mind, I think we're about, let's call it 38,000 hunters or whatever. And honestly, the majority is out of state. In-state hunter numbers have been decreasing over the past few years. We're right around 16,000, maybe 17,000 in-state and like 20,000 out of state. And so the thing about this table is you'll see the difference from status quo in millions of dollars. And then they do another calculation about, well, if they bought an elk tag and a qualifying license, where is our revenue at? With a decrease in 10%, the revenue drops by about 1.8 million. With a decrease in 25%, depending on which chart you're looking at, we'll just round it off to about, it's a $6 million decrease in revenue. These commissioners have a trustee responsibility, a fiduciary responsibility to the state. One thing that I researched and I put together a whole Excel sheet, what I'm going to do is create an individual email, send it to each commissioner prior to this meeting, and then during the meeting kind of present my findings. But my findings are that our non-resident elk tag, depending on how you slice and dice it, is $356 cheaper than every other state on average. So if you just take these numbers at face value and you increase non-resident elk tag by $356, we are in a $4 million surplus next year while reducing elk tags by 10%, while maintaining OTC archery elk and limiting non-resident hunting. And so I'm hoping to present an argument like this, like, hey, trustees, fiduciary responsibility, here's a solution that increases revenue, maintains OTC archery elk hunting, limits non-residents. And the other part of my proposal is let's establish an accurate and a mandatory reporting system for all elk hunters and let's use some of this $4 million surplus to fund the development of this digital system. And now in 5 years from now, we can use accurate data to determine if our, where our herds are at, where our hunter numbers are at, which units actually have specific crowding issues, and then make a more proper determination from there.
Well, and even more importantly, find out which units have the most take.
Yes.
You know, from a success standpoint, because that's how to properly manage a herd. Is you have to know the number of hunters, but you most importantly, you need to know the number of take of animals taken out off that landscape, because that is, that's huge.
Yeah. And if you're surveying people, granted, that's probably the only survey call I get that I'm excited to answer. It's still, you're still that. Not, it's still not accurate, right? It's just not, there's going to be a larger margin of error.
It's a sampling and it, you know, I mean, hey, it's worked for them for a long time, but I do think that the time to make that change is now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the reality is our hunter numbers are pretty significant in Colorado right now. And with more data comes more information and more knowledge. And, you know, it allows them to better and more effectively manage the herds.
Absolutely.
Which at the end of the day is everybody's goal.
Even
though we were portrayed by one commissioner that we just didn't care about the animal populations or the welfare of them, which simply just could not be farther from the truth.
We can't all be animal rights lawyers.
We can't, although they do have some that are. And honestly, you know what? We have worked pretty positively with at least one of them in the past. And we hope to continue to do so. I mean, the fact is we may not agree on everything. And let me rephrase that. We won't agree on everything, but if we agree on enough of the basic principles, then we can find common ground. And that's something that I think is lost in our country right now, not just in wildlife management, but in politics in general, is finding that common ground that allows us to effectively negotiate.
Absolutely. And that's the thing I think we're doing well, but just a constant reminder is like, it's easy to be passionate and therefore angry or frustrated about these things. Yeah. But if you let that come through, that's all they're going to remember. People remember how you made them feel.
Right.
So there's just this thing of like, be level headed in these situations. You know, like there's this part of me that wanted to, my first draft of this proposal was like, to my knowledge, with other than Commissioner Haskett, none of you are involved with archery, have a vested interest in bow hunting, and are none
actually,
of you.
Commissioner Otero is.
Oh, okay, that's good.
In fact, he sat in on both he and Commissioner Haskett have sat in on board meetings on Zoom.
CBA meetings.
The CBA board meetings over the last year.
Well, that's good to know about Otero.
Commissioner Otero was instrumental in last summer in getting the allocation numbers, the percentages changed.
Well, that's wonderful. That's good to know.
It's good. Hey, we do have some friends on there, you know, and honestly, the way we have approached these things, we shouldn't be losing any friends. I mean, we have not gone on there and gone scorched earth on anybody.
Right.
We haven't participated in any of these big calls to not put people on and stuff. We've stayed very neutral on that. First of all, wouldn't be very smart for us to go on there and say, hey, we don't want people getting elected on here. And then we turn around 30 days later and say,
they're sitting right in front of
your votes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there's a political strategy to all of that.
There was some political strategy in that. And honestly, it was something that we did discuss, you know, because sure. You know, hey, we do need to be aware of who's on that commission. And if there's somebody who shouldn't be there, yeah, we should speak. We should be able to speak out on that without fear of, you know, getting
retaliation
slapped.
Yeah.
Later and on when we try to do something.
The reality is, I believe these appointments are 4 years. Every sitting member of the commission's appointment will terminate prior to the next big game season structure.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And three of them terminate in 2024, which means that Polis might have this opportunity to nominate three more people. So I think that'd be a total of seven of the 11 commissioners would come from a Polis appointment, which is just frustrating seeing the trends.
And it might be, they might all be Polis appointees by then, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that, but I do believe that most all of them will be.
Yeah. And so there's just this thing, and like, I don't know if this fits into the argument or not, but like, hey, remember that you're a political appointment, and that if this appointment, if you don't do what the will of the people does, you're kind of destroying the fabric of democracy. And this might get back to the guy who put you in this seat, you know? And like, I don't know how much commissioners or the director will respond to that, but it is truth, right? Like, you were appointed by a guy who we might not support if you don't support this kind of thing. And that's how politics work. That's how lobbying works. All of this stuff works.
Sure is.
But it needs to be peaceful. It needs to be like a gentle reminder versus a bullying. Hey, you got 43.
And again, that's why I was complimentary at the beginning here. I felt that every single person conducted themselves very professionally and were well-spoken with facts and opinions that were strong to and meant a lot to them. And that's what this should be. That's exactly what the goal should be here, is to get good people with passionate opinions speaking up on behalf of what's important to them.
Absolutely. And the easiest way to do that is you could go to CPW's website, but their SEO is pretty good. So if you in Google type CPW commission, the top result will take you to this page, which has the commission, the members, the meetings, the submit public comments page. I'll hyperlink to all of this in the show notes. Awesome. But right now, for the April 5th meeting, I'm going to try to release this podcast tomorrow. For the April 5th meeting, there is a pre-registration via a Google form to submit public comments. So make sure that you go to the CPW submit public comment page, click on that form, fill out your information, and then on April 5th, go register to comment. You also can email your comments to the commission. There's an email address that I'll link, but dnr_cbwcommission@state.co.us. And you can email in your statements if you don't think you can make it, or if you're going to make it, but you're worried that you might not be able to speak, email your statement in before. And allegedly, they are reading them. So
I've heard the same. I've heard that they do read them. And, you know, I mean, hey, we've spoken up on a number of things. I mean, over the years, the CBA has been a very powerful voice there. And, you know, in fact, I sat in a meeting that wasn't related to this, a herd management meeting. And there was a guy there who complained very aggressively about that damn CBA and how they just spoke up for bow hunters all the time. And nobody did that for, you know, and for others. And like, I sat there that meeting and a bunch of people knew who I was. And I felt a lot of eyeballs on me waiting for me to speak up. And I stayed seated because all I could think was, yeah, he's right. That's exactly what we do.
That's what we're here for.
it was a great source of pride for me. I sat there and I called Paul Navarre, I called Steve Hilde, and I called Conrad Dreher and a few others, and Ann Lane over our last several CPW liaisons, and said, hey, thanks for being that guy who stood up for bow hunters and spoke on our behalf. You know,
I love
it. That's what we're here for. I mean, that's exactly why an organization like the CBA exists.
Yeah. And like, participate in this so we have more Septembers, right? Like,
absolutely.
Now is the time to do this. Go shoot your bow, climb the mountain, write a letter.
And hey, just get online, be there on Zoom or be there in person. I mean, we need people there so that they can see that this is not an acceptable solution.
One thing that bothered me that Matt said was that he's a non-resident limited and a resident OTC adds complexity. And so what I've added to my statement is complexity should not deter us from pursuing what's ultimately in the best interest of our community and the cherished traditions we hold.
Well, that's well stated. And, you know, let's be honest. There's a lot of really smart people who work at CPW.
Yeah,
there really are. And I'm not being facetious or sarcastic when I say that, but all of those smart people can surely come up with a solution.
Yeah. And that's the thing that bothers me, is it just felt like I heard Jay I think it's Touchton, was like, boy, that complexity really sounds like, boy, he's eating it. He's eating it, spoon feeding it to him.
Keep in mind that in the periphery, on parallel tracks here, there's also a draw working group that's meeting, and they've had, I think they've had three meetings now, two or three. I've watched the first two, which, I mean, they're hard to watch. They're hard to follow because it's a lot of people in the Bighorn room, and there's a lot of voices talking, and you can't really tell who it is. And so, but that's, so in that respect, it's a little bit confusing, but there's a, that whole group is meeting, trying to simplify the draw process. And, you know, it's an interesting composition for the group, because you've got, you know, you have resident hunters, you have non-resident hunters, you have outfitters, you have, you know, a whole cross section of people represented there. But I honestly don't know another state who, if they had something like this, are going to invite non-residents to participate in it.
But that's, absolutely.
I mean, you know, hey, Colorado has always been the
hunter
most
friendly.
Friendly state in the country, and that's fine. We're not, you know, even the change that we had made last year from 35 down to 25 for the non-resident allocation on tags, my gosh, 25%, that's still exponentially higher than any other Western state is getting.
So much. It's so interesting. It's like, I get that we are like the tourist Rocky Mountain state, and that's okay. Let's come here and enjoy it. That's why I moved out here. Yeah, but at the same time.
And you know what? I've met some great non-residents in the field. I've helped some people fill tags over the years, and I'll continue to do it. I don't hate non-residents by any stretch.
No, but if I have to pay $1,200 in your state, you got to come pay $1,200
of mine. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I paid a whole lot more to go hunt in Utah last year. I had a limited entry elk tag on what ended up to be kind of a bust of a hunt due to winter kill that they'd had over there. And their, you know, reporting on that was off a bit, but, well, but yeah, it was a, you know, between that and the deer tag, my gosh, that was $1,500, if I'm not mistaken.
It ain't cheap.
14, 15.
So another part of what I'm, my thoughts that I'm putting together for this April 5th meeting, and people please steal from me if this resonates with you. But I was going to say, since our last meeting or in preparation for this presentation, I've conducted thorough research on what non-resident archery elk hunting opportunities are in neighboring states. And if you take a state like Utah, they have 5,200 people that have 10 years of preference points built up that have not applied. If you take a state like New Mexico, there are...
I cashed in 13 last year in Utah.
Yeah, you started that process in 2008 or 9 or something. That's crazy.
There you go.
And so, like, same idea. New Mexico, there are 400 tags for 27,000 non-resident applicants. That's a 1.6% chance of hitting.
And zero preference points.
Yep. And then Arizona, so, although it's a beautiful place to hunt with trophy capability, it's basically a long shot for everybody that's applying. And so,
best, yeah.
Hopefully, I can say these things of like, you can't just expect us to go somewhere else and do this. So at least give us five more years to build up points in all these other places to have a fighting chance to do this.
Well, and Jake, thank you for mentioning points, because here's the thing: if residents decided, hey, next year, yeah, or if they decide that next year we're all, every archery tag's a draw tag. Well, you're going to see point creep the likes of which you've never seen.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who are holding on to points right now. And the beauty of Colorado is that it's allowed us in the past to build preference points while still hunting every year. Mm-hmm. Now these OTC hunts aren't as high a quality as unit 10 or 61 or, you know, I mean, any 201, any of these numbers that people are very, very familiar with.
Yeah.
And I don't want to burn anybody's honey hole.
You burn it 25 years from now.
that's why I threw out, you know, units that are going to take,
yeah, unit one
to two dozen years or I mean, gosh, you and I both know a guy who has like 28 points and is chasing, trying to get 201. And I don't blame him because he's going to have a world-class experience when he does draw that tag. But the problem is, without having that end, that ability to achieve that end goal of having that high-quality hunt, what do we have? You know, I mean, if you force everybody to burn their points right now, and you know, you take all these guys who have maybe they have a dozen points. Well, point banking is not coming back. I mean, that's been made pretty clear. That's going to take a lot of those units, those midpoint units, and you're going to have guys dumping 10 points to go hunt a good unit. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and I'm curious to see.
So you're in the game.
Like the OT. I'm curious, the OTC unit I hunt, that might be a 2-point unit next, or 2024, or 2025, you know, rather.
Chances are it'll be a 0-point unit.
Yeah.
And chances are. But you don't know that. There's mm-hmm. no guarantee. And so that what this does is it takes away the predictability of being able to get tags. And predictability of being able to hunt. Here's my biggest concern, Jake. My son's 18. He's graduating from high school. He's going down to Alamosa to college. And if he can't get a tag to hunt every year to 2 years, what's he going to find to fill his time in the fall instead? You know, and when that happens, what happens to our hunting heritage? Does it just cease to exist? And that's a concern to me.
I think it resonates even deeper than that because I completely hear it. And I even have this thing of like, oh shit, my kids might not even know what an OTC hunt is, right?
They
like
might not.
16 no. years, 20 years from now. but the other side of this is it's not just, oh, what is my kid going to do in September? It's a year round thing. I climb the mountain by my house 3 times a week, and you better know that I'm thinking about elk every step of those 1,200 feet every single time I do it. And it's my motivation. It's why I have a rubber elk in my basement I shoot at 2 yards. It's why I tinker with my gear all the time. It's why I do an ab workout that I want to do every single day, and I'm trying to cut 20 pounds.
It's not a September pursuit. Like you said, it's a year-round pursuit. Hey, I'm shooting my bow every chance I get. For the exact same reasons. I'm hiking every chance I get for the exact same reasons. And this isn't a hobby to me by any stretch. Hey, if it was, I wouldn't be on the CBA board given as much of my time as I do.
Right.
If it was a hobby, you know, this is a lifestyle for me. This is my passion. This is what I do. And I mean, if this is taken away from us, and this is the point that we need to make very, very clear when we speak with those who are ultimately going to make this decision on our behalfs, is that this is just what this does mean to us and what losing this would mean to us. And, you know, and again, you know, this preference point thing is a hotly discussed topic right now. And it's something that we need to be very sure we are all pushing in the same direction on that, you know.
Yeah.
Because again, the ability to predict your future hunting opportunities through preference points is phenomenal. You take that, let's go back to New Mexico real mm-hmm. quick. They have a very low non-resident allocation to begin with. So with you not having any points, you and I say I've been applying for the last 10 years and drawn one tag. And then you just got in the pool. So next year, we're on completely equal ground. I mean, I might have 8 years of unsuccessful applications in New Mexico where I've given them zero interest loans for, you know, for a few months. But that does not.
You have nothing to show for it.
Any closer to drawing a tag.
And conversely, if you do that same thing in Arizona, you've over 10 years, you've spent $1,060 to maybe get the privilege to buy a $1,050 tag.
Well,
so now elk hunting is $2,100 for a shitty unit.
Potentially. Now, again, let's go back to my experience in Utah last year. So I had 13 preference points. I'd bought 13 hunting licenses over the years, plus my preference point fees. I was already, I mean, just rounding it up, I was in that thing. I was already in that hunt well over $1,000, probably close to $1,300. Then the tag was $1,000, but I was paying for those preference points along the way because they put me in a better position to draw a tag.
Yep.
And that's a great thing, being able to predict that time where you will be able to go out and hunt. So one of the other odd things that's involved with this that I'm not sure everybody has really seen this. Lane mentioned it in his comment to the commissioners, was the fact that to apply, you have to have the qualifying license. So if a resident is just going down and buying his elk tag, I mean, that's what, $60, and he's out the door. Well, now if he has to apply plus the $60, I mean, this is going to, and I'm not sure that's really been factored in to CPW's whole financial analysis on this yet, because I do think that pushing everybody to a draw does come out with a pretty big financial windfall for them in the form of that qualifying license.
Yeah, it's interesting math that has to be worked out. And the other thing that I don't realize how I didn't understand this last year when I was applying, but Montana has a 3-point cap and then it just resets. And so in 10 or 15 years, we're going to have to go to that system anyway, or else it's just going to be point creep city.
Well, and hey, point creep, that's something that the draw discussion group, that draw working group has been discussing heavily. And I mean, one of the things that it looks like they're going to suggest is what basically a hybrid draw. So all the tags would be, you know, a certain percentage of them would go to in like a random draw. And then a certain percentage, you know, a bigger percentage, hopefully would go to preference point holders. Because I mean, hey, like a guy like me, I've got 15 moose points. Kyle has 6. Well, Kyle and I have about the same odds of drawing a moose tag.
Right.
And you know, the fact is there should be some preference given to those with the higher preference. So,
yeah, absolutely.
It's not easy, Jake. This is a very layered, nuanced, and as much as I hate saying, oh, it's a nuanced conversation, this is a heavily nuanced conversation. And it's a discussion that this is why it's so important that we make our opinions known.
Because, absolutely.
And one of the things that I think the commissioners need to understand is, you know, that ability for residents to hunt and, you know, to apply for a preference point and be able to hunt. I mean, you know, a lot of the talk in this working group has been that no matter what choice you draw on your application right now, everybody understands that if we all put 201 down as our first choice, yeah, every single one of us are going to get a freaking preference point, you know, unless you've got, you know, 28, 30 points rolling into it, you're going to get a preference point. And then you'll be able to, you know, you might be able to draw your second choice without losing your points or using your points, or you could go hunt OTC. But again, when these opportunities start getting whittled down, hunters lose. That's all there is to it. I mean, the hunters lose, and our lifestyle is greatly impacted as a result.
Absolutely. And I forget which state it was, but one state just eliminated its governor tag. They ruled it under
Arizona. Okay. So what they did, they eliminated their auction tag. So they still have a raffle tag, but they eliminated the auction tag.
Meaning one person could buy it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Arizona was bringing in a bunch of money for those tags. I mean, we're talking a couple $1 million a year, and that money is earmarked for conservation projects for that species. So, I mean, I don't look at that as a real win.
I do and I don't, because the thing that I was thinking of is, like, if we're talking about fiduciary responsibility, crowding, funding, why don't we take all, maybe not desert bighorns, but the other nine big game species, put a raffle on it and just say, hey, you want to throw $5 during this application to put your hat in the in this? Or Montana does it with a $20 raffle. $20 times 20,000 applicants, that's $400,000 for that elk right there. And it's coming from a crowd source. And so, like, there's ways that we could solve these things that I feel like are just people are being lazy about.
well, and hey, don't get me wrong. I'm in most of those, Jake. I jump in every year in the one in Wyoming because, I mean, man, they've got some attractive stuff. And, you know, it's the old lottery slogan of you can't win if you don't play. Now, granted, if you do play, your odds are very, very, very slightly increased.
Yeah, right.
Who don't, but somebody's going to win. And
someone's going to win.
Hear my name be called,
and if it's $20 going to a CPW type of organization, I'm fine with that. And so it's like a feel-good effort, and I think it's something people be willing to do. And, hey, man, someone is going to draw the tag, right? It's not zero people. This isn't a scam. So I'm getting a little sidebarred there, but – before we talk about a little bit of the deer season or if we have any more thoughts on that, just so people know, go to the commission page, submit a public comment, check out the big game season structure proposal, prepare your statement. Don't just wing it, because if you're listening, I apologize, but you could tell the guys who winged it on the last one. It just didn't go as smooth. And so I suggest, even if it's a 1-minute statement versus a 3-minute statement, just prepare something, look it over, kind of remove the hate from it, and get ready to speak next Friday.
But I'll tell you what, Jake, I just want to emphasize what you just said. Showing up means everything. I mean, Matt Jackson, who's been our magazine editor and now co-editor, his signature line is the world is run by those who show up.
Yeah.
And guys, that's gotta be us. It is simply not an option to sit on the sidelines right now. We just can't do it.
And
we can't afford it. There's too much at stake.
If I could be a jerk, I don't want to hear you next year or in August complaining that we lost this thing if I didn't see your face at the meeting, you know?
Absolutely.
With that, I'm curious if you had any additional thoughts around this mule deer season and how it's going
to
work out.
Yeah, you know, thanks for giving me the time earlier to explain where that started versus where it ended up. And what they're proposing is, boy, that'd be great. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'd love to have one of those high country tags in that time period, and even a mid mountain tag. I mean, it would be a fantastic time to have that tag, but I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty strongly in favor of what we originally proposed. And I would sure love to see it swing back towards that, because again, right now, this last season structure of, you know, the September 2nd to September 30th dates, man, those do not favor the archery deer hunter, not even a little bit. And that's something that we want to correct.
Yeah.
And again, I feel like we proposed something very, you know, very reasonable and, you know, hopefully we can find some middle ground on that. But, you know, we've got requests out there for meetings with folks within the CPW staff as well to try to find some middle ground on these things.
Yeah. The other thing that's curious to me, and it's not CBA related, but this idea of not going limited on rifle. It just seems so silly to me of like they're exactly it's a dollar it's a dollar thing. Well, but
here's, and they've said as much. They are terrified of the financial impacts, the possible financial impacts of that decision. Man, I mean, you know, we're Colorado's like plan D for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, for non-residents. I mean, good non-residents who are applying, you know, I mean, good non-residents, but non-residents who are hunting multiple states. I mean, hey, if they apply for Utah, they apply for Wyoming and Montana and New Mexico, and they get, you know, rejection letters from all of them. Hey, no problem. I can still go hunt in Colorado.
Yeah.
And it's great that an opportunity like that does exist. But, you know, this is what we need to look at. And I mean, they're terrified that that money that comes in from non-resident elk hunters, I mean, let's not make any mistakes. That does steer the ship.
Oh, yeah.
That is the straw that stirs the drink, you know, so to speak. But
it's a frustrating thing that it's like their money is, let's call it 10x our money, the cost of tags and whatnot. And it's just like, yeah, but my opinion should be 10x their opinion. I'm a resident.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, this big engaged survey that they sent out, I mean, there weren't that many respondents to it. Mm-hmm. You know, relatively speaking, they said they sent out 6,000 surveys and a bunch of them to non-residents and residents alike. And they said that it was one of their higher percentage of responses at 26%, which, if I'm not mistaken, put it right in the 1600 number mm-hmm. range for respondents. And I mean, dude, we got our survey that we did last year, we had 3,500 responses to that. Maybe yeah. they should have us run their surveys.
I think the data might get skewed.
But really, without a doubt, it would. Because, hey, you know, we can phrase some questions to get the answers that we want as well. But truthfully, it's one of those things that we're all participants in this game. And we all want what's best for, you know, giving us, you know, opportunities to be able to hunt as often as we possibly can while still maintaining good populations of animals on the landscape.
Yeah. The thing that I want to convey to these people is like, let's say with Otero aside, it's like, because you aren't connected to this, it's easy to make a decision to remove it. And there's this thing that we're not just statistics that are being presented to you, we're people whose lives will be irrevocably Absolutely. Altered by these decisions. So it's like, think about this, right? It's not just a person. It's, I don't know if you saw that last commission meeting, but there's that gentleman who was crying who lost his father, who like archery elk hunting was. And I was like, this is the type of shit we're talking about, right?
that's where he goes to feel closest to his dad. And I mean, for that opportunity to become possibly something he experiences every 3 years, every 1,000 days. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think we hit it from all fronts, right? The emotional, the logical, the financial, and hopefully there's enough persuasion over the next 2 or 3 months to move the needle here.
That's the hope. That's the hope. But if there's one thing, again, show up.
Show
Just
up.
Be there. Make sure you don't have regrets in late June if they vote against us and you think, man, I probably should have shown up. Well, and just remove that doubt.
And if you're like, it's the middle of the day, I wish I could, you'd use a sick day to go elk hunting. So use a sick day to save elk hunting.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, let me double check this.
Yeah, take a look. I
just got the agenda sent to me earlier today. And public comment starts at 3:40 p.m.
Okay, cool.
So it's not even taking a day off. It could be just asking out a little bit early. And again, you know, hey, showing up on Zoom's great. We do encourage as many people to be there in person as humanly possible. It's going to be difficult for me to be there in person because it's the same day that the Mile High Hunt Expo starts. And, you know, we do have a booth out there, which, by the way, we encourage everybody to come out there. We're giving away an African hunt.
Oh, shit.
Somebody who signs up to be a CBA member that weekend is going to win an African hunt.
I think my girlfriend's about to become a CBA member.
I'll bet she will. And that's pretty awesome. Yeah, and hey, we are literally everybody who signs up, show us proof that you signed up right there. We put your name on a ticket, goes into the bucket, and somebody is going to walk out of there pretty freaking happy on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, nothing like a $40 African hunt. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a pretty substantial discount. I'll just say it.
Oh man, that's awesome.
But yeah, well, so I will likely sign up to speak remotely, unless we can kind of work out booth, somebody man the booth and
Yeah,
to be able to
I'm going to be in New
be.
York, so I can't be there, but I'm going to speak remotely. I'm going to send my comments in
Perfect.
ahead of time, and I'm definitely going to
Awesome.
speak at the May 2nd meeting. But I appreciate you coming on such short notice. I know life's been busy for you lately, but it's good that we
No,
get this
hey,
out there.
always time for this, Jake. And this is important to just as important to me as it is to everybody else. And it's something that we just want everybody to understand that the CBA supports this going forward. We need to have our number, one of the main things in our mission is to maintain and increase hunter opportunities.
Which is
And
also
so we're pr
CPD is the commission's mission as well. So
sure
let's get them
is.
to stick to it.
Sure is. I
I
like it.
really
Thank you,
appreciate it,
Jake.
Henry. We'll
Appreciate
talk
it.
soon.
Take care.